She waited while the man set things in motion, tapping her foot on the floor, and was relieved when Arthur had finished.
"Thank you, Arthur. Would you be so good as to have any messages brought over to me as soon as possible by one of your goblin couriers, please? And oh, it's your son's birthday, isn't it?"
"Yes, tomorrow."
A heavy gold coin dropped into the man's hand. "Tell him not to spend it all at once," said a voice in the distance, and suddenly Lady Margalotta was no longer there. The man looked nervously at the shiny coin in his hand. But there, that was the gentry for you. It paid to be in with the gentry. She had been so helpful when his daughter was taken bad as well. Yes, of course, she was a vampire, but she wasn't a bad person, and he was oh so very glad he could be of use to her. It had been a long wait to get home, but a wait worth waiting for, and after a pleasant evening with a doorbell, what could be better than being woken up at 3 a.m. by members of the palace guard? And of course, the answer was absolutely everything, thought Moist. Crossley was so furious that they were backing away from him across the threshold, and Moist heard him say, "This is insufferable. What about habeas corpus?" And the most senior of the guard said, "What about habeas corpus?" Moist sighed and pulled on his trousers. Nowadays he kept a pair at hand, ready for occasions such as this. He had had enough, and so, stepping into his shoes and buttoning his shirt, he more or less slid down the stairs to where the grinning guards were shouldering aside the still protesting Crossley. He was aware of Adora Bell, at her spikiest, looking over the banister, and he had one of those to-hell-with-it moments. As the guards strode into the hallway, he walked up to them and said, "Where's your warrant?"
"What? We don't have to have a warrant."
"Okay," said Moist. "Then you should seriously consider, for your own sake, apologising to my wife for disturbing us at this time of the morning. She gets very unhappy if her sleep is interrupted." At that instant, Adora Bell leaned over the banister and said, "This is a most excellent crossbow, one of Burley and Strong in the Arm's finest, and I can only fire it once, gentlemen. So which intruder will I hit? Because right now, intruders are what you appear to be, and rude intruders at that. After all, a simple 'Do you mind coming with us, sir?' would have done the trick." Raising the loaded crossbow, Adora Bell continued, "Moist, is this the one with the dodgy hair trigger? I always get them confused." Moist held out his hands and said, "This is how it's going to go. You may think that Vetinari will be on your side, the majesty of the patrician and what have you. On the other hand, my wife could shoot any one of you if she wanted to, and quite possibly might hit me instead. And I suspect Moist von Lipwig is more important to the patrician than you bunch of Herberts." "Off you go, gentlemen," Adora Bell chimed in from her vantage point. "I'm sure my husband will attend on his lordship around breakfast time. It's always good to do business on a full stomach." Moist looked at the guards and said, "Gentlemen, I have no intention of getting you into trouble, or indeed of allowing my wife to skewer any one or two of you. And so I think I'd like to have an early morning stroll to the palace. If it so happens that you are walking that way at the same time, well, so be it. Although you might want to make that a brisk walk, because I fear my wife will be watching us go from the upstairs window, and that is the dodgy crossbow she's holding in her hands." And as he sauntered after the suddenly very sprightly guards, clanging against each other in their hurry to get away, Moist was surprised to see the impeccably ironed Crossley make a fist and whisper, "Well done, sir. They don't even clean their boots when they step inside." And the sedate little man's face was fierce and fiery. Within the palace, Moist found Lord Vetinari in conversation with a stone-faced Commander Vimes. The normal calm of the oblong office had been replaced by a low hum of determined-looking clerks arriving with messages to hand over to Drumknot. Vetinari looked up and said, "Ah, Mr. Lipwig, I'm so glad you could spare us a little time from your early morning exercise routine. Your guards can't run for toffee. You ought to do something about it, sir, and while we're on the subject, it would be a good idea to teach them some manners." The patrician lifted an eyebrow. "I understood. It was the prodding you objected to, Mr. Lipwig. Was there prodding?"
"No, sir, but..."
"I'm glad to hear it," said his lordship.
"So, if we may, to business?"
"As I suspected, the apologists for the Grags and other dwarf malcontents have merely been lying low, and I believe that in the darkness scandalous undertakings are still sprouting like mushrooms.
It appears that there has been a palace coup in Schmalzberg, only the third one in the history of the dwarfs. Unfortunately, the Low King is, as they say, out of position in Quirm, where he has been attending a summit with Diamond King of Trolls. Rhys Reeson is a notable negotiator, as we all know well, from the Combe Valley Accord, and he has held the fractious coalition of dwarf chief mining engineers together for many years. And he is no mean practitioner with the axe, I believe, but he needs to be back in Uberwald with his inner council if this unfortunate turn of events is not to spread underground to other mines. Having considered the options, continued the patrician, it would seem that the railway route to Uberwald, presently under construction, would provide the swiftest and safest and most comfortable method for transporting the Low King, his retinue and war councillors. Time is, as they say, of the essence. You, Mr. Lipwig, will travel with all speed to Quirm and take charge of arrangements. Commander Vimes will provide watchmen as an escort and will join you himself as you pass back through Ankh-Morpork, with reinforcements as he sees fit. Be aware, Mr. Lipwig, that this is your Combe Valley, on wheels. And when you get to Quirm, said Vimes, be sure to look for a dwarf called Bashful Bashfulson, very useful and most definitely on the Low King's side. The line is nowhere near finished, sir, Moist wailed. Mr. Lipwig, you know already that it is not your job to tell me what the problems are. It is your job to tell me about the solutions. Do we have an understanding? I am sure that Harry King will have a high-speed locomotive he can spare. One of his flyers, perhaps. But, my lord, Harry might have a dozen or so locomotives to spare, but it's the laying of the tracks. That's the rub. Mr. Lipwig, I am ordering you to make miracles by all means necessary, said Vetinari. Do I make my point? I am sure I could make it somewhat pointier. Moist saluted, and with no hint of sarcasm said, Exactly, sir. Action this day. Miracles are us, sir. And laconically, Vetinari said, Try to make it yesterday, Mr. Lipwig. And that, Moist knew, was that. As far as that conversation was concerned. Drumknot had been busy. Even as Moist was being roused from his bed by the palace guard, messengers had been sent to Harry King and to Simnel's home. By the time Moist arrived at the compound, he found it even busier than it was in the middle of the day. There to greet him in the grey light of early dawn were Harry and Dick. They appeared to be having an argument, and Simnel was looking rather unhappy.
"It's the look of the thing, Dick," Harry was saying. "I mean, Iron Girder is wonderful, of course, but I'm sure the flyers are classier and more suitable for royalty."
"Sorry, Harry," Simnel replied. "I think it might be risky if Iron Girder weren't the engine. Don't ask me why, because I can't explain why, even with misleading rule. But she is what we need. And to tell the truth, sir, I've shined her up so much. Polished her, greased her, checked that. She's fit for any king or queen, come to that. All the flyers are good and reet smart too, but I'll say it again, my Iron Girder is best locomotive in any emergency."
The arguments chased each other through Moist's brain. Vetinari says this has to be top secret, and it would be Iron Girder's first trip beyond the compound in months. Everyone is bound to notice, but we'll be running an unscheduled train, so they're going to notice anyway. And if it's one of the usual flyers, all the regular passengers will want to know why they can't get on it. And there'll be the armed escort from the watch that'll really make us stick out a mile. And after all, if you're going to run a special train, the locomotive should be special. "You know what, Harry," said Moist, "I think Dick's right about this. There's something about that engine." Just then, from Iron Girder, a little way away, there came a perceptible hiss of steam. Even Harry noticed it. And Simnel said, "Steam's up, gentlemen. All aboard, those who are going to Quirm. I'm sorry, Mr. Lipwig, but his lordship's orders are to send freight trucks only, to distract attention-like. And to tell truth, it may be the only way we'll get some watch officers to fit on board. I've to work on that before you get back. Don't worry, he added hastily, seeing the other's horror. "It'll be regular carriages hitched up for the return journey."
"I hope those trucks are full," said Harry. "Can't afford to waste the journey when there's goods waiting to go."
"Well, the front one is presently a bit full of Sergeant Detritus," said Simnel. And indeed, through its open hatch, Moist could now make out the form of the troll watchman, patiently hunched against the far wall. "But yes, we've loaded up the rest right and tight."
Moist snoozed his way to Quirm, rocked in the cradle of Iron Girder. He was certain she gave a smoother ride than any of the new-fangled flyers. Everyone said that was silly, but nevertheless, the thought didn't leave him. Somehow, the flyers looked like machinery, but Iron Girder always looked like somebody, and the train spotters all seemed to think the same thing. It was as if she was the railway.
The chateau that had been put at the disposal of the Low King while he was in Quirm for the all-important summit had ridiculously grand written all over it. Moist was greeted at the main entrance by a dwarf who was neatly dressed, but notably lacking in the usual weaponry.
"Bashful, bashfulson, Mr. von Lipwig. I know your face. It's in the papers so often."
As they hurried inside, Bashful said, "Please let me, as they say, mark your card, Mr. Lipwig. The king is furious. Furious with the rebels, and furious with himself for not doing enough at the right time. And I dare say he's also furious with me. But me? Well, I look to the sky and I say to Tack, 'Don't get mad. But when you made us dwarfs, you had a bad day and couldn't find anything in the subtlety box. It seems we'd sooner fight and argue than live.'"
Inside the chateau, there was a squad of heavily armed dwarfs on guard. Heavily armed, that is, being more heavily armed than the average dwarf, who nevertheless could generally look like a squad all by himself. They scowled at Moist, with the regulation scowl of all guards everywhere, which intimated that you were less than the dust on the dust on their boots, so watch out. Bashfulson ignored them, and led Moist into the great hall, which was buzzing with activity. But then there was the question of seeing the Low King. It was a delicate matter, but Moist wasn't going to let courtiers and guards push him around. He knew Rhys Reeson was a sensible and powerful dwarf, moderate, the kind of person who looks facts in the face, knowing that it's the only way to survive. Moist waited while Bashfulson dealt with the protocols, and wondered how many of the glittering company in the hall were actually on the king's side. Suspicion floated in the air like a fine dust, settling on every shoulder. After all, this was the beginning of a clandestine dwarf war. Much better to fight the trolls. You could recognise the trolls as possibly the enemy, but who knew where the traitors were in this chattering throng? One of the dwarf guards attempted to dispossess Moist of his treasured lockpicks, and only let go when Moist had retrieved them, using very non-diplomatic language and some clever misdirection. He hadn't actually made use of the lockpicks in years, his tongue generally being more effective at getting into places than some bent pieces of metal ever could be. Nevertheless, he was still fuming, and was about to say something non-political when Bashfulson grabbed him by the arm and took him to see the king. The king's suite was, surprisingly, at the top of the building. In normal dwarf dwellings, the lower a dwarf, the more important he was, and so, Moist surmised, putting the Low King into rooms on the top floor might just be a ruse to thwart any traditionally minded enemies. Kings don't travel lightly or quietly. There were dwarfish flunkies everywhere alongside the chateau staff, folding things and indeed shovelling things into cases with a sense of panic, as if the bailiffs were coming. But at last, Moist and Bashfulson were ushered into a small antechamber where the Low King was planning his counter-coup with his inner council. Every so often, a clax arrived and was hurried to the king. Rhys Reeson was smaller and slighter than Moist had expected, and was surrounded in this cramped room by generals and some of the rest of the circus that has to follow a monarch. Moist noticed black looks from a few dwarfs, angry at the human trespasser. Bashfulson bowed to the king as he introduced Moist.
"Mr. von Lipwig, your majesty, an envoy of Lord Veterinari."
"And killer of a number of renegade delvers," said the king to Moist. "And not least a bank manager," Rhys laughed. "It must be tough in the banking business, Mr. Lipwig."
Moist
joined in the little attempt at laughter and said, "You have no idea, sire, but the most important thing you need to know about me is that I was a crook and a scoundrel and a very clever one." What better man to run the Royal Bank of Ankh-Morpork and the Mint than a crook? I had the tendencies of a crook and many of the skills of a crook, and because I look at things with a crooked eye, metaphorically speaking, I see the opportunities and the problems. I'm very lucky, and I have the knack of finding friends easily. But probably not with those delvers, eh? Said the king. I was lucky, and I survived. I survived, and, if I may say so, I wish survival to the low king and his court. All right, he thought, that was drawing the long bow and no mistake, but he couldn't avoid it. All that armament getting in one another's way, well, with all that milling about, something would go wrong sooner or later. Mr. Lipwig, as you know, I have sudden important business that requires my presence in Oberwald as soon as possible, and at the highest speed. I understand, from the clacks I received from Lord Vetinari this morning, that you have a plan to get me there. I'm curious to know what that plan involves. There were the usual murmurs and glances, but Moist was not going to be intimidated by a bunch of small people who were giving themselves airs. He was never one for protocol. It got in the way, and often concealed nasty and dangerous things. I'm afraid, sire, that I'm not willing to divulge Lord Vetinari's proposal here. There are too many people in this room, any one of whom could be a traitor. Uproar ensued. Moist kept his face blank and totally unmoving until all protestations had been protested. I'm not here to be nice, and I have to tell you that, while on this mission, my allegiance is to you and only you, sire. Apart from Mr. Bashfulson here, I don't know any of the rest of these dwarfs. The opposition must surely be intelligent enough to make certain they have a sleeper in the palace, funneling everything back to them. He had gone too far, he knew it, but the dwarfs had not impressed him with their security. It was far too stiff, all front and pomposity. Mr. Lipwig, I am the king, surely, and I am still alive because of whom I know and whom I can trust, see? I appreciate your thoroughness in this matter. The king turned to the dwarf by his side. Aaron, some privacy, if you please. And the dwarf called Aaron, who seemed to Moist to be a trusted assistant, a dwarf version of Drumknot, cleared the room of hangers-on, leaving only himself, Bashfulson, and a few other obviously senior dwarfs. Thank you, said the king. Now, Mr. Lipwig, in this small room I trust everybody. And, boyo, I might just trust you, because you are Mr. Lipwig, and I know your reputation. You're a survivor, quite possibly a plaything of the gods, or perhaps the most handsome bag of wind that there has ever been. You get away with it, and thus I hope I will too, because more than our lives depend on us getting me to Oberwald and the Scone of Stone before those bastards wreck everything I stand for. He smiled and said, I hope that doesn't feel like pressure. Your Majesty, pressure is where I start, said Moist. There was a noisy party with lots of quaffing and dwarf songs in full swing as the low king and his commanders left the chateau quietly from the servants' entrance a short hour later. Several coaches had come and gone already that morning, and the departure of a few more was unremarkable. Tagwen Tagwenson is doing a grand job of playing king today, Rhys noted to Moist as their carriage swung down the long gravel driveway. That song has over 100 verses. They can keep that up for days. When they arrived at the Quirm terminus, they were met by the extremely large form of Sergeant Detritus of the Ankh-Morpork City Watch, who was standing guard by Iron Girder, hefting his peacemaker, which had what might be called a wholesale capability. The low king's eyes lit up when he recognised the sergeant, and he exclaimed, Detritus, if you're on board, then perhaps I don't need any other bodyguards. This was said laughing, but Moist couldn't help thinking that it might just be true.
Good to see you, king, Detritus roared. He looked around sharply and said, Derrini Greggs here. If yes, please line up.
Behind the king, always present, Aaron was carefully busying himself getting people and weapons on board. He opened the door and quickly ushered Rhys into the gleaming carriage. Bashfulson tapped Detritus on the knee.
I am indeed a Grag sergeant, and lining up as requested. What next?
Detritus scratched his head.
But you is okay, Mr. Bashfulson. The commander knows you and his lady.
Ah, so I'm lining up to get on the train then, said the dwarf. It's pleasant to meet you again, sergeant, but please remember there are Grags and Grags.
And he turned to follow Aaron into the carriage. Once the whole retinue was safely aboard, Moist stood watch while Detritus heaved himself into the guard's van, which gave a tremendous creak and groan, but everything seemed to hold, so with a signal to the footplate, Moist scrambled up into the van and they were off. The train pulled away with the usual jerk of the couplings, and as the long journey back to Ankh-Morpork began, Moist suddenly realised that he was, as it were, not required on this voyage. In the coaches, the Low King, his bodyguards and councillors, huddled together and were speaking very quietly, their thoughts deep in planning. On the footplate, the driver was focused on getting his royal cargo to its destination and was in a world of concentration. You could see it dripping off him like snow, listening to the wheels, listening to the rails, watching the lights, checking the gauges and driving the train in such a positive way that possibly, even without Iron Girder herself, they might just get there on willpower alone. And the stoker made it clear that he had no need of Moist's assistance. So Moist now had nothing to do except sleep and worry so much. If the king was a target, if the Grags got to hear that he was on the train, then the train was bound to be a target, although, as it happened, Moist hoped that they had run some interference. For his part, Moist thought attacks would surely come out in the wilderness later, on the long, lonely haul up to Uberwald. Despite everything he'd said to Lord Vetinari, he knew it was oh so easy to derail a locomotive. The ever-diligent Mr. Simnel had told Moist that he'd tried it at low speed, at the back of the compound, in a place where Iron Girder couldn't see, with impressive effects. Once derailed, it required the combined efforts of several trolls and golems over many hours, with a clever system of pulleys, to get the engine back on the track. If it happened to an engine travelling at speed under full steam, and this, Moist thought, is a man who lives by the sliding rule and the sine and cosine, not forgetting the tangent. Moist never challenged Dick's proclamations regarding his sliding rule. He could make the numbers dance, and Moist was yet to see him get things wrong. It was like wizardry, but without the wizards and all their mess. And indeed, as Dick was finding out, you could even have a girlfriend, an intriguing thought that seemed to echo at the back of his mind. And it was common knowledge now that Dick and Harry's niece were, as they say, walking out. He had apparently one night driven Emily around the compound by starlight, and that had to mean something, didn't it? And Dick had told Moist, in the voice of somebody having found a strange and attractive new world, that she was very good at handling the firebox without ever getting her dress dirty. And he'd added, "I reckon Iron Girder likes her. You never see a smut on her. I come out every time looking like a dustman, and when we've finished she looks like she's one of them ballerinas or something." But right now there was so much else to think about. This most important of trains was moving its priceless cargo, and Moist knew that the whole business relied on fairly simple things being done properly, at the precise time and in exactly the right way. There were people who made certain that there was coal in the coal bunkers along the route, and by now he knew how much water would be needed, and who would make certain that it would be there when and where it was required. But how did you make certain that the person who made certain actually did these things? It had to be somebody's responsibility. And these tasks seemed to Moist like a great big pyramid, whose every stone had to be laid in place before one wheel turned. In some ways it frightened him. For most of his life he had been mostly alone, and as for the bank and the mint, well, Vetinari had got it right. He did have a knack for finding and keeping people who liked their jobs and were good at them. And since everything was delegated, why then he could be Moist von Lipwig, a catalyst in the world. And now he could see why people had anxiety attacks, The kind of people who would lock their door and halfway up the garden path would come back to see if they'd locked said door and unlock it to make sure, and lock it again, then set off up the path, only to go through the whole terrible procedure once more. The fact of the matter was, you had to hope and assume that a lot of capable people had done lots of capable things in a capable way, and double-check them frequently to make sure everything was right. So, worrying was stupid, wasn't it? But worrying was never quite like that. It sat like a little goblin on your shoulder and whispered. And suddenly, that kind of worried person in the strange world of mistrust was now entering the stuff of nightmares, and right now he, Moist von Lipwig, for heaven's sake, was worried. Yes, really very worried. What had been left in? What had been left out? I can hear the wheels just down there, and I know the journey is going to take 4 days at least, not counting breakdowns, dreadful weather, and the storms up in the mountains. They could be ferocious. And all this, without mentioning some lunatic dwarfs hell-bent on ruining the party for everybody. It has to be said that this was an inner monologue. Yes, it was an inner monologue's own personal inner monologue, but outside Moist's skin, absolute stone-cold certainty reigned. Nothing could possibly go wrong. After all, Dick would be dealing with the technicalities, and he was a genius. Not in the same way that Leonard of Querm was a genius, but, Moist thought loyally, in a reassuring, solid, simnal sort of way. Leonard would probably get distracted halfway through the journey by an idea for using cabbages as fuel, or using the waste from the firebox to grow better cabbages, or painting a masterpiece of a nymph clad in cabbage leaves and coal. But Dick had his flat cap on straight. Vimes would be coming too, and although part of Moist, the part that still thought of coppers as people to avoid even in your best disguise, got the willies when the commander looked at him in the eye or any other part of his anatomy, the rest of him was very grateful that blackboard monitor Vimes would be on his side if the grags came calling. In fact, Moist was full of little monologues, chasing one another around, but afterwards, because they were his monologues, they decided that they would come together again as one whole Moist von Lipwig and would therefore maintain and get through no matter the circumstances. "Everything is going to be marvellous," he assured himself. "When has it ever not been? You're the lucky Moist von Lipwig." Right in the centre, the hypothetical goblin of uncertainty twisted itself into a tiny, quivering mush. Moist wished it well, smiled, and said goodbye. Harry King's vast mansion was well protected, and a perfect place for a private dinner where the Low King and Vetinari could meet while preparations were being made for the long haul to Uberwald. It was widely considered that Harry's undertakers had the jump on your average soldier or policeman when it came to a scrap, because those people had been taught to have rules, while most of Harry's boys couldn't even spell the word. Any intruder foolish enough to be found lurking in the shrubbery of Harry's extensive estate in the dark and the dripping rain would be pruned in no short order. Even though this was a private dinner, Effie King was not going to let the side down. She had begun her preparations for the meal with a headache, and then moved on to a dither, before segueing into an organisation of military precision and dimensions, bullying the cooks on the way and frantically looking up such things as what spoon you used with what soup. Effie genuflected deeply to the Low King as he arrived in her oak-panelled dining room, and Effie was in a more expensive and acceptable version of Hog Heaven. "How was your journey, sire? Safe and comfortable?" The Low King hesitated for a moment. "It's Euphemia, isn't it?" he said. Effie was on fire. "Yes, Your Majesty, but just Effie to you." The King smiled again. "Very good, and I'm Your Majesty to you, Lady King." Effie looked somewhat challenged until the King of the Dwarfs held out his hand and said, "Actually, you can call me anything you like. I was just trying to make an old dwarf joke. Just like myself right now, a fugitive trying to avoid even more dangerous fugitives and reliant on the help of others, such as your noble husband and his friends." Moist smiled as the noble penny dropped on Effie. The King now looked around the other guests,
He smiled at Commander Vimes and Lady Sybil, and shook hands with Adora Bell, who was, Moist thought proudly, a real looker when she wasn't in her work clothes.